I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The Trayvon Martin case is mixing with election year politics, reaching all the way to the White House and Congress. On our monthly politics segment, we asked 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry to discuss the political impacts behind the case of the 17-year-old shot to death by a neighborhood watchman. We also get their thoughts on the Orlando mayor's race, plus why one local radio station was yanked off the air because of a mistake more than 50 years ago. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. Dick Batchelor, of course, former State House representative. Good to have you in, Dick.
Good to be back. Thank you.
And also happy to be joined by former Republican Congressman Lou Fry. Great to see you, Lou.
Yes, I love the circular firing squad. That's our motto this year.
For the Republicans.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm not armed for this session. Let's talk about what's been going on up in Sanford. Of course, Trayvon Martin's death is taking place here, and it's an election year. And, of course, we're seeing all kinds of politicians stepping up and talking about this shooting death that has happened. The case has come up on the presidential campaign trail and in Congress. And so I wonder, what is your take, Lou Fry, on an election year politics getting into this story, and is that a bad mix?
This is a bad memory. When I first was running for Congress, Dick, they had the assassination of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and we had Vietnam, and this country was torn apart. I mean, literally, but there wasn't a college that practically didn't have some sort of a demonstration in that. And so when you look at something like this, you obviously want the rule of law to apply. You've seen what happens when the rule of law doesn't apply, which can be caused by the authorities, by the way, not by someone else. And you hope that this thing finally settles down. I don't think we need thousands of people flying in here and out to necessarily to be make it a productive visit. So I guess with that background and that, I hope that we do recognize the rule of law, and we all take a deep breath and hope that what justice, whatever it is, triumphs.
Dick Batchelor, your take on politics getting into the mix of the Trayvon Martin case?
Well, first of all, it's hard to say anything about that case unless you're absolutely measured and careful so as to not misinterpret. Number one, I think Lou and I can both say we hope justice prevails as he just did, number one. Number two, there are questions raised, of course, about why Zimmerman was not arrested, and I think that's a very, very fair question. And it's now playing out. I would think with the governor appointing an independent prosecutor from Duval County that she will now do her job. She has a reputation of being a very tough prosecutor. And if they have the evidence, the state's attorney could make the decision to bring charges, or they could take it to a grand jury. But I hope it works out now. That the problem is the politics has invited itself into this debate. Whether it's the president, kind of his comment, even though it was by inference.
Is that unusual to see the president stepping in?
I think so. But on the other hand, you had Senator Sipling here locally, too, basically saying everybody in Central Florida has a white plantation mentality. It can never be fair. It cannot be heard in this community. We should take the case to someplace in Pensacola or someplace in Miami. So, unfortunately, both sides have weighed in on this. I think it made some incendiary remarks that are not helpful to this case.
Lou Fry, what do you think in terms of the president weighing in on this matter? Does that help or hinder, or is it what you would expect a president to do?
It's not what I would expect a president to do, especially in a matter like this where the facts don't seem to be known. It seems to me that it's sort of like pouring gasoline on a fire that's already raging, but it's certainly from a political standpoint, probably from his standpoint, a very smart thing to do. It probably does well in the polls. And as you said, this is an election year.
Let me interject one thing. I think the president was measured, though, and in what he said. If I had a son, he would look like Trayvon Warren. And I think it was measured not to suggest guilt or innocence in this case. And that was very appropriate to stay out of that because the Justice Department through the FBI is involved in this case. But you have to be careful. But Juan Williams made a very good point, I think, in one of the syndicated columns he wrote, and that is, look, Not dismissing anything about this case. I want to be very clear. You don't dismiss anything about this case. But setting this case aside for a moment, what about all the black-on-black crime in this country? Most homicides in the black community are blacks killing blacks. And where's the outrage in Chicago and the Detroit and Washington, D.C. and New York City? And I keep naming city after city after city. So maybe it's an opportunity for us to use this very, very bad case as a maybe a synthesis or a catalyst to bring people together about a conversation on crime and prevention in a much larger context. This could be emblematic of it, but have a conversation and bring the communities together but not divide the community over this issue.
That's really a good thing. And the other thing that struck me through this whole thing is I hate labels. I hate labeling people. I hate labeling philosophies. I hate labeling dresses and so forth. And maybe this is something for all of us to stop a little bit and remember where each person's an individual, how they dress or something shouldn't dictate how we operate towards them. And I think it's important that the civility that we talk about in the political system carries over to a situation like this. And Dick's remarks were right on.
Let me just ask you, Lou Fry, up in Congress just recently we saw a forum held where Trayvon Martin's parents were invited to come in, and that was held by the minority party, as I understand it. What does that something like that accomplish in the halls of Congress?
Well, I don't. If you're talking about getting some favorable publicity for what you believe in and so forth, you probably moved it down that line. You probably have a bill or something that is going to be very difficult to vote against whenever they come up with some modifications of the law. So, and it's an opportunity for some people who are pretty outspoken on some things to get some decent publicity and maybe some following out of it.
Dick Batchelor, what do you think in terms now we're hearing rumblings about trying to overturn the state's Stand Your Ground law? And, of course, Governor Rick Scott has established a special task force to look into that law, not to do anything until after the Trayvon Martin case has sorted itself out. But we're sure to hear from the National Rifle Association and an Associated Sportsman of Florida with Marion Hammer, of course, as their representative. How do you think that might play out?
Let me make one more point on the last part of the conversation first, and then I'll go quickly into that issue. But I think, again, this case is not unlike Rosewood. It's not unlike Coy, where it took a horrible, horrific crime to bring people's attention to a real problem beyond the crime itself. And that's why, do you take this as an opportunity to convene the community, to bring the communities together? I say that very plurally, the communities together, and have an open conversation, an honest conversation. Are there things that we can do in the community so these cases don't happen again? So that's what I hope comes out of this. As a catalyst, as a moniker to get things done in a community and have an open, honest, really transparent conversation, one. Two, as regards the law, I don't know how they cannot revisit this law and not change the law. The Stand Your Ground case law is a very, to me, it's too generalized. For instance, just recently in Miami, a man was attacked, and then the attacker backed off. He chased the attacker with a knife and stabbed the man to death in the back, stabbed him to death. The judge threw out that case recently based on this law we're talking about now. We need to go back. The legislature needs to go back and revisit this law and make it very defensive. You've got the old castle doctrine, which is you can protect your castle, which is your home, but this goes far beyond that. Stand Your Ground needs to be revisited, and there should be some parameters. If you actually chase somebody down and stab them and they're in retreat, I'm not sure that's what they intended. I hope that's not what the legislature intended.
Senator and Governor Bush mentioned the fact that that is the law was sort of, he thought, misused and that they ought to relook at it and that. And, of course, it's also a question of judges these days. The judges have maybe too broad discretion in this. It ought to be drawn a lot tighter so there isn't so much discretion in a judge who could let something like that happen.
I wonder what your thoughts are both on the way Governor Rick Scott is handling this. Of course, appointed a special prosecutor to the Trayvon Martin case. We've seen Sanford's police chief step down temporarily, and also there's been a lot of attention put on this, but we haven't seen Governor Rick Scott come down to Sanford, right. And I can't help but think that if something like this had been going on, Charlie Crist would probably
he would have bought the
appearance.
City. Yeah,
you're right.
Is this right for the governor to kind of keep a distance?
I think so. I think the governor's done the right thing. I will have to applaud him. He appointed an independent prosecutor, an independent state's attorney from Duval County, who's a very seasoned prosecutor, to look at the case and the facts. And again, she can make a decision to bring charges, or she can take it to a grand jury. And I appointed this task force to actually look at the legislation. So I think he's done two things, one in the judicial branch and one in the executive branch, to take a look at it. So I think so. But I think for him to weigh in now kind of infers innocence or guilt, and I think that would be a bad decision, particularly when his own state agency is investigating.
He's diffused, though. I think he's helped diffuse it. And the people who said nobody's doing anything, I think now there's an honest response. Yeah, didn't do it quick enough. You know, some of the thing is that justice delayed sometimes isn't justice, but they're trying to play catch-up.
You're listening to The Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with political commentators Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. I'm Mark Simpson. And, of course, we're coming right up here on the day that we'll find out whether or not Buddy Dyer could be the continuing mayor of Orlando. What do you think about it? You can let us know on Facebook or on Twitter, or send email to intersection at WMFE.org. And I wonder, Dick Batchelor, what do you think in terms of this Orlando mayor's race? Are we going to see more of Buddy Dyer, or do you think Phil Diamond has a chance, or even Ken Mulvaney or Mike Cantone?
I think you're going to see Buddy Dyer around for at least 4 years, or until he decides to run for statewide office, which could be sooner than then. It could be 2 years. I think Buddy wins, and this is I'm not from Casadega, so I can't tell the future, but I think he wins without a runoff. I think he's been a good mayor. You've got the arena downtown. You've got Performing Arts Center underway. You've got a revitalization, even though a bad economy downtown where they converted the condos to apartments. So I think the governor, that was a Freudian slip, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think Buddy gets I think he gets good marks, and I think he wins it. Now, let me hasten to point out that Phil Diamond was a great city commissioner. He's a CPA, as you know.
He's
a lawyer.
He's resigning his seat.
Resigned
no matter
his seat
what.
To run. So he kind of cashed it all in there, and he's a great guy. I think he's probably just the wrong time.
City, and they're going to miss him
yes.
with what he's done. I think when you look at Buddy's thing, and you said were there more or less of him? Well, he's lost a lot of weight.
So there's going to be more or less of him.
But when you look at the city where it was when he started and where it is today, I think in all fairness you can say it's better off. He had a bump in the road early on. But he's had a good administration, good people working with him, and I think Orlando is a better place today than it was, and I think he's earned probably the right to do it. Now, there's been a question of if he's going to run for governor or not. I thought
he's come on this program and said he intends to serve the full term.
So, but I think the idea of a governor from Orlando was a wonderful idea. If circumstances change, as they do in politics, it wouldn't be shocking to. And he wouldn't be the first one who is forced to change his mind for the good of the state.
Not to discount any of the candidates that are out there, but they do face an uphill battle against Buddy Dyer. Do you think someone like Phil Diamond, Lou Fry, actually poses a substantial threat?
Well, when you're running for office and you have three other people and you need 50%, I don't care who you are, you're just a little bit worried. You probably figure out you're going to win eventually. Buddy does, but he'd sure like to get over the first time. And certainly... Mm-hmm. There's people who are running or are very interested in it, but there's really only one major candidate opposing him, I would think, and that's Phil.
And I think the turnout would be low, too. I want to get back to the point you made about my Freudian slip about about the governor. The fact is, if Buddy wins re-election, which I expect him to the mayor of the city of Orlando, and he decides at some point in the future to rethink his, after a great prodding from the unfettered public, to run for governor, my question would be, would you not want your mayor to be governor of the state of Florida? And the answer is yes. If he's been a good mayor, I would love for him to be governor. At least I can knock on the door and they'll open it.
What does he do, though? If he gets four more years, what does he do with that? We've already seen this rapid expansion. So what's on the agenda next, Lou Fry?
Oh, for him, you mean, and what he's
going
to do?
For Buddy Dyer, if he comes in for 4 years as mayor again.
I certainly think that the finishing of the downtown area, there's a lot of work to be done down here to make the area reflect what we want, and especially the other side of the interstate. I think we have to look at that, to develop that. And
you're talking about the west side of town?
The west side of town, Paramore Zone.
Paramore and all that. There's a lot of work that has to be done, and I think he's going to look at that pretty seriously.
I want to ask you also, looking up in Washington, D.C. area, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a challenge to the Obama administration's health care overhaul. Florida lead plaintiff in the challenge that filed originally by Bill McCollum, another Orlando fellow, but also now being carried through by Attorney General Pam Bondi. And she's emerged kind of as an unofficial spokeswoman for the 26 states involved in this challenge. So how does this play into Pam Bondi's political future, Dick Batchelor?
Plays very well. In fact, Lou and I have said there, at least I think, there are three potential Republican challengers. If Rick Scott's numbers are still down around 35%, I think Jeff Atwater, our CEO in the cabinet, I think Pam Bondi, Attorney General, and I think Adam Putnam, our Secretary of Agriculture, are all contemplating running for governor someday in the state of Florida. So politically, it plays very well for her.
And what do you think, Lou Fry, in terms of Pam Bondi? Does this put her in a strong position to be able to point back and say she's doing good things? Or what happens if the case gets rejected?
Well, timing in politics is really critical. And where this is today and the decision coming out before the primary puts Pam in a wonderful place to jump out and show some leadership and attract. She will be a statewide figure by the time it's over. I don't think she is now. I think she has a way to go. But she will be. And the real question is going to be is how bad does Scott numbers have to be for somebody to jump out there? I think they're going to have to be pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. And then, there is a double-edged sword I want to point out very quickly, though, and that is, while let's say, quote, the court overturns
does she end up on the losing side?
Well, that's right. But politics change, because then I run a campaign and say there are 2 million people in the state of Florida who are uninsured. They're uninsured because of you, Pam Bondi, because you helped throw out
preconditioned health care to your kids, right?
So, absolutely. Yep. And you are no longer no pre-existing conditions. You took that away. My kids are 26 years old. They're off of it now. I can't get health care. I can't get a mammogram. Look, you turn it around. You might win that battle, but I can help you lose the war in Florida on that issue alone.
And that's a good point nationally, too, because nobody's really sure, A, how the decision is going to be, but more important, the politics of it are going to be fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the U.S. Supreme Court there, let's talk about the state Supreme Court. The Florida Senate has sent in a new redistricting map. And we're still talking about redistricting after all these months, but to the U.S. Department of Justice for review. And of course, the state Supreme Court also has to sign off on that map after previously rejecting another version of it. And, of course, we've got candidate qualifying coming up in early June here, the 4th. So what's going to happen with redistricting, Lou? Is it all going to be set and done and everything's
going to
look
nothing
wonderful?
New. It always comes up. It seems it always gets settled at the last minute. And they send it over. They send it back. What's the third time it's been sent over now?
And, yeah.
So they'll figure it out somehow or other. They may have to delay the qualifying.
I was going to ask you, do you think we're going to see a delay like that and you get the Secretary of State involved?
You certainly could. The incumbents really don't have a problem. Because, like, if you're running in a metropolitan area, even if they take part of your district away, still most of it is going to be there. The people with the problem are those who want to challenge an incumbent or find a district for themselves because they'd like to know who they're going to be running against and what the strength will be. And that, you know, hasn't been determined yet.
Dick Batchelor, are candidates worried about what's happening June 4th and with the new districts?
Well, sure, the non-incumbents are. As Lou pointed out, is a good example in Orlando. Senator Gardner, Andy Gardner's district has been carved in after the court took a look at it and rejected it. The Senate in a second version now has him in a district with Senator David Simmons. David Simmons says, I'll just move. So that one's solved. So he'll just move, and Andy won't have to run against an incumbent senator. But the one thing I want to point out, I think what the court has done validates Amendment 5 and 6 and the effort that went into that to get Amendments 5 and 6 on the Constitution as guidelines for as to how the House and Senate should do reapportionment in the Congressional and the House and Senate seats. So to that extent, I think the court, if you look at their opinion, comported very closely to that and made every effort to say 5 and 6 should be aligned with the decision.
But the question still rests, where should the real decision be made? Should it be made by the legislative body itself, who allegedly knows more about it, or by the courts who really just interpret the law? And here they're basically making the law. Now, I'm not arguing which one or the other, but there's certainly two different approaches to it.
interesting story floated the other day. U.S. Senator, former U.S. Senator Mel Martinez, talking about maybe implementing a 1% tax on high-end Central Florida restaurants and using that money towards helping the homeless and victims of domestic violence, the program modeled after one in Miami. What do you think about that, Dick Batchelor? Good idea?
Well, the concept sounds intriguing and interesting, and I'm familiar with what they've done in Miami, but the timing is not going to happen. I think it would require legislative action for to give the local authorities to be able to do that. So I don't see it. I think the one thing we need to keep an eye on, too, remember that Lou Fry and I co-chaired an effort to pass a half-penny sales tax to build new schools and rebuild old schools, and that had a 13-year lifespan, so that's not over to like 2015. So trying to put another penny on top of that, I think, notwithstanding how important it is. And you've got Commissioner Ted Edwards saying we need a dedicated fund of sources for transit. Mm-hmm. So you know, is that another penny? So I think at this point in time, in this political environment, with the high unemployment, the economy the way it is not a good time to be talking about it. Good idea, bad timing.
Lou Fry, I'm going to ask you a different question. We've been hearing a lot.
You better give the same answer.
Yeah. Amen. Hallelujah.
Just in the short time we have remaining, Governor Rick Scott considering whether or not to sign or veto a measure that would spin off the University of South Florida Polytechnic in Lakeland into another state university, making it number 12. Which way do you think that might go?
Well, I'm not sure how it's going to go. It sort of came as a little bit of a surprise. I guess I wasn't following it that closely. And you wonder with the state universities that we have and with the problems we have and with the tuition and that, whether it makes sense at this point in the economy to take that on. Now, if you're from that area, you're going to get a total different response. I think there's a heavy demand for it or that's been created over there.
Dick Batchelor, what do you say?
Well, it's not pork, it's pork light, according to Senator J.D. Alexander, chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, put it in there. But it also brings back the question, too, of the lawsuit that Senator Graham and Lou Fry filed dealing with the state university system. The fact is they try to depoliticize the state university system and build universities where needed, when needed, and appropriately. This politicizes the development of the state university system. It's strictly one-handed. Chairman Ways and Means Committee, who wanted the university there, he wants to bifurcate it from the University of South Florida. It's a parochial decision. It's a pork barrel decision, and I think it's appropriate. Should go back to the state university system and let them make the determination.
Well, I've been speaking with 90.7's political commentators, Dick Batchelor, who is a former Democratic state representative, now head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Good to have you on, Dick.
Thank you.
Also, former Republican Congressman Lou Fry, now with Lounge, Drostick, Doster, Canner, and Reed. Lou, always good to see you.
I think I've been there 25 years, so can you put a little more emphasis in the
end? And he's been there for 25 years.
Let's add his name to the end of that. Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, Fry.
Good to have you both always. Thanks so much. Coming up on Intersection, why the FCC decided to shut down a radio station at Rollins College. There are lots of stations on the radio dial in Central Florida, but one that certainly has its own sound is WPRK, broadcast out of Rollins College in Winter Park. WPRK. The station's been on the air since 1952 and run by students for nearly 60 years. But it turns out that some of that initial work to get WPRK on the air actually led to a bit of trouble with federal officials recently. Clark Sprinkle is the station manager for WPRK and here to talk about the situation. Good to have you in, Clark.
Well, thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
So WPRK actually off the air for a week recently. What happened?
Well, it turns out that back in 1952, there was an error on an application, our initial application to broadcast as a radio station. And, well, the FCC discovered that, and we went back and found the issue along with the FCC, and since then we've actually corrected that issue and we're back on the air.
So what was the actual problem?
Well, the problem was a paperwork issue, basically. We had the coordinates, the latitude and longitude coordinates, I guess, incorrect. From some years ago, 60 years ago.
You're talking about where the actual coordinates for your transmitter are.
Correct. Correct. Now, the transmitter location actually has never changed. It's always been in the same place at Rollins College, on the Rollins College campus, for the past 60 years. But maybe there was an error in writing it down or something like that 60 years ago, and that's the issue that we've just finished fixing.
So this all came about because you were in a standard process of renewing your license with the FCC.
Yes, renewing our license with the FCC, which every radio station has to go through every few years, and we went through that and discovered the issue, and we've got it all sorted out now.
So what was the reaction when you heard that?
Well, my reaction was, what do you mean that we're not in the right location? We've been here for 60 years, and you know, it's a difficult thing to comprehend sometimes when somebody says, you know, hey, you're not where you're supposed to be. And, you know, you think, well, we've been here for 60 years. Okay, where are we supposed to be exactly? So it was interesting. I did look at the actual latitude and longitude coordinates of where we were supposed to be on paper, and it was an old orange grove that is now a subdivision.
So you got shut down for a week. What was the reaction on campus?
Well, the reaction on campus was it was a really popular week, too, for WPRK. We broadcast all of the Rollins College men's and women's basketball games. The women's basketball team actually made it to the Final Four this year, and they were just starting the NCAA tournament, and unfortunately, we weren't able to air those games on the air at WPRK. So there was a lot of disappointment there that we weren't able to air those games on the air. But we did have them on the air at on the internet, at least. So we were able to bring some people some of those games. But the community really really came out and wanted to find out what was going on with WPRK. And it was really nice to find out all that community support that we do have out there in the Orlando community.
So this has all been resolved, though, now, and you're fully renewed?
We are. We have our license renewed. We're good until, I think, 2020 or something like that. So we are working through the process of fixing a couple of things with the FCC and all that stuff, but that's a long process. And as you know, big government bureaucracies, they don't move all that quick sometimes. But we are back, and we are here to stay, hopefully for another 60 years.
So this being the 60th year of the station, you're also trying to raise a little bit of money for WPRK.
Yes, we are. After 60 years, you know, you can imagine things need to be repaired and renewed a little bit. Maybe some new equipment here and there, but really we need just a good kind of a good cleaning down at the radio station. When I say cleaning, not in the sense of elbow grease and stuff like that, but a rewiring of sorts. There's been a lot of Band-Aids applied to the equipment and everything over the past 60 years. And quite frankly, we need to rip some of those Band-Aids off and start fresh in a lot of different areas. And not so much equipment-wise, but really just kind of cleaning everything up, getting everything to be more reliable and sound better, too.
Well, Clark Sprinkle is the station manager for WPRK, the student-run station at Rollins College in Winter Park. Clark, good to have you on.
Thanks so much, Mark.
And you can find out more about WPRK's efforts on our website, wmfe.org/intersection. You can find out more about Intersection and the conversations on this program online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you'll also find links to our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.